Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, you're about to listen to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast, or as all the cool kids are calling it, Rahalastapa. Yeah, you're cool. That's good. It's free on audio. I hope you're going to enjoy it. But if you want to contribute to the actual production of it, we do charge for video downloads. You can buy a series pass for £15 where you'll get 8 or 9, I think, separate podcasts now, or they're £3.50. If you just want to buy this one or one of the others in the series, if everyone who listened to this just bought one podcast, one episode of this podcast, then we'd be able to fund so many other fantastic comedy projects. So if you feel like contributing, if you go to www.gofasterstripe.com/podcasts, if you can't, just keep listening for free. Or if you don't want to pay, you think you shouldn't pay for stuff, and then this project will die and you will have murdered it. Hope you enjoy the show. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. He can't play Sabutio, but he knows how to chat. Please welcome Richard Herring. Thank you very much. Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast, or as all the cool kids are calling it, Rahalastapa. Lots of cool kids in. It's all been fun. We've had a lot of fun this series. Last week I was asking about whether who was going to go first out of Nelson Mandela and Prince Philip. God was finally going to let us know whether racism was right or wrong. I'm not very happy with what it looks. It looks bad for anti-racism, is what I'm saying at the moment. This is just as we're going to broadcast, this could be incredibly sick by the time this... I mean, it's pretty sick already. But I'm hoping God's been a bit like Alan Sugar is in The Apprentice, where he really makes it look like it's going to be one of them, doesn't he? Goes, the thing is, Nelson, you haven't been doing that well. I'm not that impressed with the way you spent a lot of time in the middle of your life really hardly doing anything. It was a waste... Say, Prince Philip, you're fine. So I'm hoping. Let's hope. Fingers crossed.
If an old man has to die, let him be Prince Philip. That's why I say. But hopefully no old men will die. They'll keep on. I'm not being disrespectful to death. I've been to a funeral this week of my grandma. Died a couple of weeks ago. Doris, who you may, if you've ever seen Boys Love Anyway, you'll know there's a lot of stuff about her. She's a remarkable, amazing woman, but she was 102. There comes a point where you can't really go on anymore. But it was kind of, it's really horrible going to funerals, right? If you've been to funerals, it's not nice. But there was a point, it was in a crematorium, that if you live to 102, right, you don't really have many friends left. That's the problem. She was a woman who was always surrounded by people, but they are now all dead. Very selfishly, they died first and she went to their funerals. And where are they now? Nowhere. So it was just the family. We knew she wasn't. An amazingly friendly and a well-loved woman in her life. But it was kind of sad, but then we were singing the first hymn, and because it's a crematorium, they just had a sort of tape which was playing quite quietly, a quite unfamiliar hymn. And there was a man behind me singing very, very loudly. You know, you get those people who just sing so loudly, he drowned out the tape, and everyone started singing this hymn at completely different parts of the hymn. Which was kind of, you know, it's a sad occasion, but that's quite funny. You're going down a line of people. And so we were all really trying not to laugh, because that would be inappropriate at my own grandma's funeral. That made it much more tempting to laugh. We did laugh quite a lot, but I think my grandma would have liked it. But rest in peace to Doris. She was a fantastic woman. And she was the first girlfriend, I've discovered, of Cyril Smith. It's not the Cyril Smith you're thinking of. You're thinking of the paedophile. He was a pedagogue, this Cyril Smith. He was a concert pianist, Cyril Smith, who lived in Middlesbrough. So don't judge until you've heard there's a lot of people called Cyril Smith. It's unlikely that Cyril Smith... I mean, if Cyril Smith had got from my grandma, he would never have gone the other way. There was a lot of women there. So, anyway, I'm not going to mess around too much. The fly of this suit is broken, so I'm kind of worried constantly it's going to come down. So I'm going to charge you with the task. And actually, let's give the people who've bought the video a treat. I'm going to charge this young lady. Oh no, I've put this function. I hope I haven't turned it off. This function currently unavailable. Hold on.
Put the microphone down.
I feel a bit disgusting now, but I'm still going to carry on. There's a young lady. She's dressed for the summer. It's not that hot out there. Your job is to... Hey, viewers. That's what you usually get. I tell you, that has just put a few nerds at home right off their stroke. It's your job to just keep your eye on my crotch during the podcast. If my fly comes down, could you just let me know? Because I'd be embarrassing in front of Edgar Wright if my penis was out. And with you sitting there. It might be noticeable, that's all I'm going to say. So look, we're going to crack on, because Edgar is in the middle of editing the film he's about to put out next month. So he has to go back and finish off the editing. So it's amazing that he's come down to do this ridiculous podcast. Will you please welcome a man who is best known... People who've just got the audio will think I'm just building up suspense. He is best known, of course, as the deep thought technician in the disappointing Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy movie. Will you please welcome Edgar Wright, ladies and gentlemen. Here he comes, hopefully. Here he comes. That's him coming. Here he comes. There he is. Sit down here, Edgar. You can take that out, leave it in, whatever you want. There we go. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm very good. How's the film coming along that you're editing right now?
I only have like tomorrow to finish it.
That's wow.
It's just the mix. So it was nice to have a little break from being in front of a loud screen for all.
You're not filming any scenes at the moment. You haven't got to that. Because if you need anyone, if you need someone to stunt double for Nick Frost, who takes all the acting work, if I ever get an acting job, I know it's because Nick Frost isn't able to do it. That's basically the only reason to get work. Do you remember being the deep thought technician in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy? You've got any memories? We'll get this out of the way first, because this is what you get asked all the time.
I do. me and Garth Jennings, who directed that film, we have a thing where we cameo in each other's movies.
Right.
So he is in Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz and this one, and I'm in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and Son of Rambo as
well. That's all right, that's a good thing. You're a teacher in Son of Rambo.
I am a teacher in Son of Rambo.
He's done a lot better out of that arrangement than you have, I have to say. So I really don't like that Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy film, but it's a difficult thing to take on, isn't it?
Well, I think it's a difficult...
I mean, this isn't your film. It's
not my film.
You know, I'll tell you, that Deep Thought Technician was fucking shit in it. That was what ruined it.
Number one or number two?
Number two.
Oh, I was number one.
Oh,
so
okay. If only I'd done my research. on that. We won't talk about that anymore. So the main thing I want to talk to you about is the rivalry between Cheddar Caves and Wookiee Hole. That is what this is mainly going to be about. This is why I've got Edgar Wright in. I grew up in Cheddar and worked at Cheddar Caves. You grew up in Wells. And that makes me laugh, because we weren't politically correct in the 1970s, I have to say. But when you said anyone was from Wells, that meant they were mentally ill in our school. Because there was a mental hospital in Wells.
Oh, that's true.
Or a hospital for mentally ill people, as I should call it now. But that was, if you go, you're going to go to Wells. So every time I say you're from Wells, I'm laughing inside of it.
The mental hospital, people called it, was called the Mendip Hospital. So it was as close a word as you could get to mental as possible. The Mendip Hospital. Yes,
and my grandma, my grandma died in Wells as well. So,
how?
She was killed by a zombie Freemason.
The Mendip Hospital was quite scary.
Yeah.
I remember.
How do you know? When did you go to the...
Well,
straight to the mental illness straight away. Did you try to kill yourself and then had to go
No,
to...
but this is... No. This is absolutely true.
It'd be good
true.
If he did, wouldn't it? It'd be good if he
It's had. Amazing. It's amazing how you'll quickly dislodge a long-buried memory.
Yeah.
But when I was at primary school, there used to be a tradition at our primary school that used to do the Christmas play. I don't know whose amazing idea this was. So I must have been 9. So you had to go and perform the Christmas play for the patients of the Mendip Hospital. Now, there were several things about that that were unsettling. It's like, one of them is I remember that, and I didn't see it, but I remember a girl in the play did said, a man was touching himself. I didn't see that. I'm glad I didn't see that. There was also somebody applauding all of the way through it. It was a very... without stopping.
He might have been applauding the man touching himself, to be fair.
I think they were sitting on opposite sides of the auditorium. So I can genuinely say that I have performed a Christmas play in an asylum.
Which explains a lot of...
I know, it was very... I didn't think anything of it at the time, but when I look back, I kind of think, whose fucking idea was that? What a crazy idea. And then it closed, about 5 years afterwards.
Right.
And now they're all fancy flats. I would not like to buy one.
Do you think it's haunted?
I don't know. Maybe.
Have you ever seen a ghost, Edgar Wright? That almost felt like it was just slipped in. It worked. Have you ever seen a ghost?
No. But my mother, who...
No, I don't know. I've seen your mother.
Wait.
Have your sibling ever seen a ghost?
No, get this.
Okay.
I'm not sure I'm going to allow it, but go on then. My mother, who worked as a cave guide at Wookiee Hole Caves, she swore that she saw ghosts.
Oh,
in
they, she
Hole
they
Caves.
Made her say that to try and get people to go to Wookiee Hole because it was so shit at Wookiee Hole. To make up, but there's a witch living in here. Then you go in and there's a cat. It's just a big shadow. You can make a shadow of anything. You just put a light in a different place. The people of Somerset are very impressed by it. You could put a shadow of a light anywhere.
I'd say Cheddar, better, the gorge is amazing.
It is amazing. And there better be no butt after this. And the caves are amazing. And Jacob's Ladder is amazing.
Jacob's Ladder
is amazing.
The
Fantasy Grotto was amazing. And now it's good. Now it's the Fantasy Quest.
But the main
quest.
Chamber in Wookiee Hole Cave is better than any of the Cheddar Caves.
Yeah, you're right. And there's a paper mill.
There's a paper mill. There's a witch. They would do this thing. I was never a cave guide there. I worked in the car park.
Well.
Waving, like, sort of during the summer. That was my job. I did it for one summer. I would just wave cars into free spaces. It was amazing. And but my friend was a cave guide, and my mother was briefly a cave guide. And they have this thing in Wookiee Hole Caves where they have the stalagmites and stalactites, and they say, oh, look at this stalactite that looks like Michael Jackson. It's absolute bullshit. But my friend also, he used to kind of lie, because there used to be things that they genuinely shot, like Doctor Who and Blake Seven, in Wookiee Old Caves. But my friend,
They shot part of the Triffids in Cheddar Caves.
My friend used to embellish it and start lying about what things have been shot there. So he used to say, and in 1983, Steven Spielberg shot Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. I used to egg him on. I just used to say, go further. Just keep like lying. Nobody's going to check up.
People, like Americans would come into Cheddar Caves and genuinely, because it was cheddar, and they'd see all the kind of stalagmites and the formations. They go, is this made of cheese? Like they thought... They thought someone had... They wanted to see a cave and they thought someone had just made loads of pretend stalagmites. Either they thought cheese was made in caves by the action of water over thousands of years, or they thought someone had carved some cheese into the shape of a stalagmite.
Would they...
I think our audience thought that as well. But is it not made of cheese?
Would they have dinosaurs at Cheddar Caves? Because they definitely at Wookiee Hole Caves, in that way that, like, if there's any kids' attraction, it's just... bung a load of dinosaurs in there as well. Nobody will question it.
Well, I've written a comedy drama about Cheddar Caves, which has not been ever... It's been commissioned, but has not got made. If you want to make it, I could turn it into a film.
I'll make it on condition we film it at Wookiee Hole Caves.
I had the Cheddar Caves, which is called Ye Olde Bridge Caves, and then there was what I call Nookie Ditch. I cleverly disguised it, but it's like, it's just in the thing, it's just fucking amazing. There's an ogre of Wookie Ditch, and they have all adverts and loads of money, and they have Jurassic Park, Jane Eyre World, you know, it's just there's something for everyone, which is sort of what I envisaged Wookiee Hole as. It was all this razzmatazz, whereas Cheddar hadn't. We had a Skellington that was related to our history teacher. Genuinely, this is genuinely true. They found a Skellington. You have to call it that. It was 10,000 years old. It had been cannibalised, and then they did a DNA test on the kids in the history class at the school, and to see if any of them were related to the Skellington. And none of them were, but the history teacher, Mr. Target, who was my history teacher, was related. And he lived about 200 yards from that cave. So in 10,000 years, his family had moved.
You just reminded me of another story about something that happened in Wookiee Hole Caves. And this wasn't my friend, but this was an older veteran cave guide who was quite grumpy. And apparently this is when my friend was working there. He had a party of, like, German exchange students who were being very noisy, and so he added into the stalagmites and stalactites bits when they were being particularly noisy. He said, you can just make out the image of Bomber Harris bombing Dresden as a way of shutting up the German students. I don't condone that.
I'd love to see a stalagmite that look like Bomber Harris bombing Dresden. There is one in Cheddar that's the Swiss village, but you have to kind of look at it upside down in some water it's all false. I don't know how false Wookiee Hole is. I don't know how much I can say.
Well, they have the one that looks like the witch. That's where the witch of Wookiee Hole comes from. And then there's one that looks like Dougal from the Magic Roundabout.
That one does look like Dougal from the Magic Roundabout. That one is generally the most astonishing and scary stalagmite of all time. Do you think he was turned into stone by the witch of Wookiee Hole? Dougal from the Magic Roundabout. But, you know, these are all just like little crawl spaces, basically, in Cheddar. So, it's all just been burrowed out. The fancy grotto was created, I think, by Roland Pavey, but it might have been Cox. Yes, that's who found the cave. But they just basically were looking for a cave by using dynamite. And they didn't find a cave, but they'd made a big enough hole to open as a cave by then. And so that was for a while. That was the fantasy grotto. You could go and touch one of those big... Remember those big orbs they used to have, and you touch them and your hair would go up in the air?
Yes.
They had one of those in it. It was amazing. I think they'd brought... I don't think that had occurred naturally. Looks like we are going to talk about Wookiee Hole and Cheddar Caves for the whole time. I would quite like to do that. Maybe we'll get you on again another time. What's great about you as a director is that lots of your juvenilia exists and is easy to find. And it's kind of, that's quite a rare thing, and it's very charming stuff. The first thing of yours that I've seen online is basically you're on Going Life.
That's right.
When you're, what, you're 13 or 14? Or?
No, I think I was at 16.
Oh. You're still very young. But you won the Going Live video making competition with a thing about disabled access. Now I've seen your true attitude towards the mentally handicapped. I realise you just did that cynically to win. It was a competition
where you had to do something about one of their causes.
Yeah, fuck
they,
that.
They did. They did. If you watch that clip again, maybe I said, if you can find it online, is that they told me by accident the night before that I'd already won.
Right.
And then they said, oh, no, he's not supposed to know. And so then a producer, this is also your first time on live television ever. Somebody says, oh, and can you just pretend that you didn't know that you won? So I was thinking, I don't know how to fucking act. So it was nerve-wracking enough being at BBC TV Centre and being on that show and then having to kind of think about, oh, I have to fake a reaction to the winning. So this is like a kind of quiz show scandal. It's amazing.
It is.
So it was very strange to kind of like in the middle of all of that to also have to fake a winning reaction. I didn't do very well.
No, I don't know. I didn't really spot it when I watched it. I thought you did very. You just look quite. You know. You like. I'll take it. My stride. I'm pretty cool. When you're being interviewed by Jenny Powell, is that on Gimme Five?
Yeah.
You're really trying to impress her. That's what I like about you. You and your friend are really trying to act all cool so that Jenny Powell will get off with you.
Yeah.
Did it work? Is my question. No.
No, she was quite tactile, though.
Was she?
I remember thinking she was quite flirty, and me and my friend were sort of in that ridiculous kind of brain space you have at 18, thinking, well, you never know. Like, I mean, she's 26, we're 18, who knows?
Add 18 and 18 together, 36-year-old, isn't it? One at each end, bang, let's go, Jenny. That's what I'd have said. It was very different times as well, the television presenters back then. That was sort of part of what was expected. If you weren't in children's television, I think any 18-year-old, kind of slightly long-haired, scruffy, smelly 18-year-old boys I can get off, I will take the Give Me Five job. But because you did a film called A Fistful of Fingers.
Yes.
But you did this completely off your own bat, right? Is that right? You just made it yourself for £15,000 or something like that?
I made a version on video that I made when I was still at the Blue School, which is like a comprehensive in Somerset.
Boo. Kings of Wessex. Come on. Who's on my side?
We went to school. Our schools are only 10 miles apart.
They are.
So we went to school very close to each other.
We would have played each other at rugby were I not 8 years older than you, and if either of us played rugby.
I didn't. You're very accurate in that presumption. I did not play rugby. I would not have been in the rugby or cricket. I would not have been representing my school in sports.
No, I didn't.
How can you believe that?
I can believe it. My sister went to the Blue School, and she was very sporty, so she did very well for the Blue School. She wouldn't go to... My dad was my headmaster, for those few people who don't know that, in the Kings of Wessex, and my sister sensibly refused to go to the same school.
Did you get taught by your dad?
Yeah.
Well, I got taught by my mum and my dad.
Yeah,
me and
my mum as well. We've both been taught by both our parents.
Which is absolutely... I even asked... Went to the headmaster and said, can I be moved into a different stream so I don't have to be taught by my mum and my dad? They said, no, I'm sorry. And it was absolutely, mortifyingly embarrassing. They only taught at my school, the Blue School, for a year. But suddenly my mum had an opinion on all of the girls in my class. And there was a girl that I fancied, and she goes, why do you like her? Why don't you like Vanessa Burton? She's very pretty. Which is stuff that you do not want to hear.
Yeah.
But on Vanessa Burton was quite pretty, if you're listening, Vanessa.
Yeah. That news spread to Cheddar. On the positive side, if you call your teacher mum, you know, you might be right. Unless it's your dad. So it's not as embarrassing. Did you ever do that?
My mum called me Pickle in front of the class. Which at the age of 14 is not a lot of fun. Not a lot of fun for everybody in the class to know what your pet name is at home.
I might call you Pickle for the rest of the
time. You're allowed.
So how did you get the funding together? Because that's what I thought you were. I probably thought you were probably at the Wells Cathedral School and you were posh.
No.
And your dad said, here's Edgar, here's £15,000. Go and make an airplane western. which is sort of what you did.
No, what happened was is I used to make these videos like with the camera that I won on Going Live. Yeah. So I made the first version of that with this video camera, and then I did some like festivals around the country. Like there's this festival called the Co-op Young Filmmakers Festival, and I'd been on some other TV shows as well, like Gimme Five with the lovely Jenny Powell. And but so then I went to art college, and then I remade for some things on 16mm. And basically the initial money came from the editor of the local paper had just got an inheritance and had like a big sort of tax loss to make, and gave us like £11,000 to make the entire movie, which we basically then filmed for as long as we could until the money ran out, which is basically 21 days. And then like we I think for the last 10 days of that, we just filmed without taking a day off. So we just filmed for as long as we could until the money ran out. But I shot that when I was 20, yeah. Like with both kind of people from my art college and people from the Blue School, and a couple of people from Kings of Wessex.
What? How could they cross over to the
amazing.
Just tempt them over with a bit of cheese. It's a pretty amazing film. I don't know which, but I guess I've seen the cinema release version on YouTube.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. But it's pretty amazing. I think to have the ambition and drive at 20 to do all that and put all that together. And it got shown in some cinemas.
It got shown next door at the Prince Charles. Yeah. It was one of those things that, like, where it's so powered along by, like, youthful naivety that if you stop to think about it for a second, it would completely collapse. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, but most people don't do that. That's what I think, like, to be that young and to think, I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
And then obviously led on to all the other things, because people saw Matt Lucas and David Walliams saw it today. And
yeah. I was never that happy with it, really. And I think it really hit me. Making kind of amateur films is fine, because people will give you, like, the benefit of the doubt in terms of like, oh, well, it's an amateur film. But as soon as you present something in a cinema, even if it's in one cinema, you are reviewed against, like, mate. And this is the thing, Fistful of Fingers opened in the Prince Charles next door the same weekend that at the Odeon Leicester Square, GoldenEye opened. Now, so, and then there's the very surreal experience of seeing your film reviewed in the same week as GoldenEye. And you kind of think that you'll be given, oh, they'll give me the benefit of the doubt because it's cheap. No, it's like, anyway, I think it really like sort of bugged me for a long time, because it wasn't as good as it was in my head. And so I was sort of, you know, tried to kind of then struggle to make the next film, you know, which was Sean like 9 years later, like as good as it was in my head. You can see
the way it's set up. I mean, you've got, what I like about it is you've got quite a lot of West Country young men trying to be like Clint Eastwood and Americans, and kind of getting a little bit of that in the middle of there
with no facial hair whatsoever.
So, but I think it's very, it's, you know, it isn't so quaint that it's ridiculously funny because of that, but there's that element to it. But I think, you know, it's, you can see the skill behind it, I think. So it's not, you know, and then it obviously led to you doing all these things, and a show that we're doing this very traditionally, like a proper interview, going through. We're not here, haven't jumped around at all yet. We'll see what happens next. You ended up doing Asylum, which I'd never even heard of until this weekend.
Yeah.
Was it based on the Mendip Hospital in Wales?
No, and you were there around the same time, but there was the Paramount Comedy Channel, like around that time. Before I did Asylum, I did a show with Matt Lucas and David Walliams when, like, I was the year after Fistful of Fingers, so I was 21 and Matt was 21 and Dave was 23, and that was called Mash and Peas. I did this very, very silly sketch show with them, and then I did Asylum immediately afterwards. And, you know, it was shot in shot somewhere in Surrey in an old, like, asylum.
Right.
But it was very sort of, quite a thin conceit, but then it had all these amazing people in it.
Yeah,
like,
that's what's...
And not just Simon and Jessica, but Julian Barrett and Bill Bailey, just like amazing people in that show just come down to shoot for a day or, you know.
But it seemed like Paramount really, because obviously Naira Parks and more... I forgot her name.
Mafamwi Moore.
Who went on to be massive, like, in producers and directors and executives. They were sort of behind all of this. We did Festival of Fun in Montreal, me and Stu, with Julian Barrett and Darren Barrett and Noel Fielding. which they were sort of behind. I think it was a very hard thing for us to do, and I think I treated, because we were on BBC Two at the time, or I think we were sort of having a year off from being on BBC Two, and I think I was probably a bit dismissive of it all, but they actually, all those people, Robert Popper was working on as the runner or something on that show. All these people went on to be, like, you know, so important in comedy in the next 10 years, and I fucked up. by being dismissive and rude to them all. It was quite a hard job to do, but it was amazing. Like, you know, the Little Britain, basically, you know, that sort of started building up through there, and you know.
Yeah, it was a lot of people that were there at the same, like, because Sacha Baron Cohen did it first thing there. Lee Francis was like worked in the art department.
Oh, really?
You know, so there was lots of people there that have, like, since gone on to other things. I remember Simon Amstutz was around as well.
He must have been about 3 years old.
Yeah, always been very young.
But it was a lot. It was quite an exciting time because it was a lot of young people putting together. And it's actually, you can see it on YouTube Asylum. It's kind of worth a look. I think it's you know, you can see lots of Norman Lovett's in it. There's lots of stand-ups in it.
Yeah,
sort of being doing their stand-up material in slightly odd ways.
Yeah.
So it feels a bit like this is cobbled together. You know,
basically what it actually was like supposed to be just stand-ups in an asylum. And then the story and stuff. That's kind of like Simon and Jessica had done stuff before and had met before, but it was through that they had a lot of scenes together that my family Moore, in fact, said, oh, those two should do a sitcom. You guys should write a sitcom. So that's where Space came from. It's just that they were in scenes together.
Yeah. Know?
And Julian Barrett, who was in Asylum, was originally supposed to play Mark Heap's part in Spaced. So that character originally was written for him, and it was a lot more like his character in Asylum.
Right.
And then that didn't work out, and we rewrote it for him. But it was funny because it was like, you know, it was like, oh, let's take Simon and Jess and Julian and do a show.
It's good. Do you think there will ever be another series of Space? I've got to ask it. But I've got a follow-up that makes this a lot better. Because I've got an idea. It's not what you think. It's not what you think. I've moved on from that.
You want me to answer?
I've got an idea, because it's quite difficult. You know, it'd be difficult to get the cast of Space back together, right? Because they're movie stars.
I think you don't want to see them older. That's my thing.
What I'd suggest? Do you remember Saved by the Bell?
Yes.
What they did when the people got too old?
College years.
They did that first. That was when they were a bit older. Then they did Saved by the Bell, the new class. What I'd suggest? Why don't you do Spaced, the new cast, the new class? Where it's younger for some new people, and two of the characters can stay in. You have to choose out who's Mr. Belding. Do you not remember Saved by the Bell? Mr. Belding. I shouldn't know what Saved by the Bell is. I am way too old to watch. I thought this would really hit with my target demographic. I love Saved by the Bell. Miss Screech and Mr. Belding stayed in.
Yeah.
They were the funny characters, right?
Yeah.
And so you could get, like, Nick Frost and Mark Heap could stay in it. They, for me, are Screech, Mr. Belding. And then you bring in a whole new crazy lot of kids in, and then you could do a whole new series.
I don't know.
No?
No.
I quite like the idea, because it's quite hard writing a new sitcom. I've got an idea for a sitcom, which is about a man who's obsessed with the series Goodnight Sweetheart. And just watches it over and over again till his wife says, why are you still watching this? You're going insane. He becomes so obsessed with Goodnight Sweetheart, he goes and looks at all the locations of Goodnight Sweetheart because he likes it so much. Then he goes down Duckett's Alley and finds himself taken back in time to the set of Goodnight Sweetheart. And then because he's sort of angry with Goodnight Sweetheart because it's a missed opportunity. It should have been a fucking brilliant sitcom. And it's wasted by being this stupid, farcical, nonsensical thing that doesn't even understand how time travel works. But he could go back and then be critical of that, but also get off with Dervla Kerwin in the beginning, not the one who takes it. Then he goes over to... Once they change the cast. You're not familiar with...
Who plays young... I guess they don't know. Who would play young... Who would play the other... You'd have Lyndhurst in the real show.
Well, I don't know if you'd be able to, because he looks too... I would look weird now. I don't know if... You know, it's kind of... It's like when they did Man on the Moon and they had the cast of Taxi playing themselves. Yes. Did you ever see that?
Yes, it's
strange. And it really looks wrong, because they're about 30 years older and they're still trying to walk around like they're 20-year-old. Have you seen any films? Or do you watch television? I thought you'd be interested in this. I'm doing a... Idiots. So I think you'd have to get someone who looked like Nicholas Lyndhurst younger to play Nicholas Lyndhurst. Nicholas Lyndhurst now could play himself now in the present time and the man who's in the, when he's in the future, when in the present time, he could go and track down Nicholas Lyndhurst and go, do you remember
like,
me?
It could be like Looper. You could have Nicholas Lyndhurst in prosthetics.
Yeah.
And make him look younger.
Yeah, I suppose. I don't know if we would have the budget for that. Because I am imagining I have to make this on my own. Without the permission of the good night, the people at Marks and Graham. Because they probably won't like me going, that was shit.
Do you have a title? Because I have a title for you.
What is it?
Good night, sweetheart,
yeah.
Sweetheart.
Yeah, that was one. Or you have to make it a 1992 song, like something by East 17. Everybody in the House of Love or something would have to be. Because that's what Goodnight Sweetheart is. I have to explain everything. Goodnight Sweetheart was a wartime song. So the character coming back, the character would come back from the future, and then he would go to Nicholas Lyndhurst and pretend he'd written songs from the future, and Nicholas Lyndhurst would be such an idiot, he wouldn't even realise his own trick was being played on him by this new, and he'd be coming with iPhones going, oh yeah, I got that because I'm working in the Secret Service. Nicholas Lyndhurst wouldn't know
it,
that.
Call it Stay Another Day. There you go, you got it. It's their big hit.
That is fantastic. Was it from 1992? Though we'll have to do some research, probably.
No, I'm going to say 1991.
Yeah, okay, that will be fine. I don't even know when Goodnight Sweetheart was made. To be honest, I probably have to do a bit more work. Let's go to an emergency question. Shamefully, somebody on Twitter has alerted Edgar Wright to this question, so he should be prepared. Boo. Thank you, Andy McCacher. This is the face of angry fandom. Look how angry he is. So angry, the two people next to him were spontaneously combusted. Have you ever tried to suck your own cock?
Not at Wookiee Hole Caves.
Because there was always someone to do it for me there.
The witch.
Your mum. And I'll get the other emergency.
I could never have sexual relations with my teacher.
It's that in Cheddar, like about in Kings of Wessex, honestly, about five teachers were married to pupils.
There was one in the blue school as well.
It was no problem, but it was different times. It was a much, much better time. You could just, that was, made it easier for the teachers. They could concentrate more on their work if their wives were in the class. They could have conversations. They married them after they were pupils, usually. All games teachers like just fuck girls on matches in the woods, right? That happened everywhere.
I was not a big sports kid. So I wouldn't see any of that.
That's when you end up on the mattresses if you're not careful. That's what. I'm not saying any of the teachers at my school did that. If you had to choose between having a hand made out of ham,
yeah,
or you haven't heard this question, no one's tricked you off this one, or an armpit that dispenses sun cream, but only two bottles a year amount of sun cream. It's not an infinite amount of sun cream. You have to choose the factor. You can't then sway from that choice. Your hand made of ham, you can eat it, but it will grow back eventually, but not immediately. If you could nibble it and that would grow back, or you can wait a month.
I'd go for the hand of ham.
Would you? Yeah.
Because I tend to stay out of the sun anyway, so sun cream would be useless to me.
Right.
Because I don't tend to be in the sun. But I do like biting my nails, so the ham would be a tasty treat.
They would be like pork. I imagine the nails would be like pork scratchings.
Yeah.
Which,
good.
Yeah. I saw how pork scratchings were made this week, actually, on the Hairy Bikers. We're discussing. They went and made some pork scratchings. It's made just from, pork scratchings just made from that part of the pig. I mean, they're not exactly that part, because that's a human leg. But the sort of groinal thigh area.
My friend used to work at is it Miller's? Do they still have Miller's, the pork pie people?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it was Miller's, wasn't it?
I don't know. Was it Miller's?
Miller's? Does that ring a bell?
No. Might be a Welsh firm.
Let me come back to
that. Never went out.
You can cut that bit out.
Okay. What did he do?
No, he just said, he said, you know Miller's pork pies? He goes, I worked there at the summer. He goes, never eat one. And you take that advice.
Yeah. Well, it's like John Thompson used to work at a plant that bottled canned fizzy drinks. And he just said that rats ran all over the... If you don't, never drink direct from a can. Because just rats pissed all over the cans all the time. That's a bit late for most of you by the sounds of it.
My mother once worked at Cadbury's on the assembly line, and apparently at Cadbury's, if you're working on the assembly line, they say, eat as much chocolate as you want, because they know that after, like, a day, you'll be fucking sick of it.
Yeah, not me. I'd have cream eggs coming out of my face. Stuart Lee, as well, used to work at an orange juice for bottling plants. He was the quality controller of the orange juice. That was his job. And this was, like, straight after university. He was, like, 20 years old. I don't think he was in a position to... to do this. I can't remember where they are, what the firm was. It was somewhere near Oxford. One time, the machine got clogged up and they opened it up.
No.
And it was full of maggots.
No!
So don't drink that orange juice either. I mean, basically, just don't eat anything that you haven't prepared yourself. If you eat pork scratchings, you're going to eat a pig's cock at some point, is what I'm telling you. Hey, not for the first time, eh? I'm sorry, I apologise. That was completely unwarranted. So back to I'm being hissed. I was pointing at John Galtiani. That's what I was pointing at. He's the one who's had... Yeah, I know his name. Nearly. You're married? That's not your wife. Fucking hell. Look at this nerd. Look at... I mean, he looks actually...
Hello.
Look at that. Archie, you're on the thing already. Look, you look quite like Edgar Wright, but look at that. How did that happen? Massive cock. Let's have a look. Doesn't look that big. Am I big? Is it inappropriate, John? If I crossed the line?
Not really.
No, not really. It's me, so I haven't crossed the line. He's done very well there. Bastard. Want to swap? You seen My Missus? Do you want to swap for? Have you ever read Switch Bitch by Roald Dahl? It's different times. That was all right as a title in the 1970s. Two men who look quite similar. We've got similar. They grew a beard, so they look the same. They swapped over. They both fancied each other's wives. So one night they kind of learnt each other's sexual techniques and the way they work. So they went over. They were next door to each other. We don't live next door to each other, so make this a bit harder. And what they changed over and they had sex in the dark with their wives. They essentially raped each other's wives. This is tales of the unexpected. And one of the guys really liked to take time and pleasure his wife, and the other one just was a kind of wham bam thank you man. And then in the morning. Spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't read Switch Bitch by Roald Dahl. We're laughing and learning, aren't we, today? The other guy who made love slowly. I feel like I'm wasting my time with Edgar right here. The guy who made love slowly.
My dad used to have this book, but I never read it.
Oh, you should read it. It's really good. He refused to do it the way, so he made love to the other wife in the way he would make love to his own wife. And in the morning, the wife whose husband was the quick lover went, oh, you were amazing last night. I don't know what happened. I've never really enjoyed having sex with you before, but last night you were amazing. And that was the twist. So, do you fancy having a crack at that? I'm the one who goes... I'll be the one who goes really fast. Anyway, back to Edgar Wright. Are we going to discuss this in our own spare time? We're not. It's not wasting Edgar Wright. He could be editing with The World's End now. She wouldn't want you back. So I am amazing. You'd have to put on about 4 stone as well. So we'd have to work over... Stop talking about this. So the new. Let's talk about the new film before I forget. In case we forget to do that, because there is time. We haven't even gotten to Shaun of the Dead. I don't think it's wasting my time with rubbish questions. The World's End.
Yes.
I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about what I've seen a little bit of it online and various places. It's very good. It's very exciting. I think.
Thank you.
So how much are you allowed to talk about it?
Well, I can...
Because it's out next month.
It's out next
but
month.
With your stuff, there's always some nice little surprises and juicy bits that we don't
there
want to
some
give
juicy
away.
Bits. It's not all in the trailer, as some people like to imagine. But it's... it's the third script that I've written with Simon, and we wanted to do a third film that was in... We never were going to do sequels to the other two, so we wanted to do, like, a thematic sequel, like a tonal kind of, like, trilogy, and, like, make another film that was... felt like a piece with the other two. And so they're all kind of like the fun thing for us doing those films, and you know, because each one has got slightly bigger, is it's just fun kind of causing chaos in locations that you grew up in.
Yeah.
You know, because they look sort of... We tried as much as we can, even though they get kind of bigger and more elaborate, to make them very British.
Yeah.
And so I'm very pleased with the new one of just kind of causing complete havoc in Letchworth and Welwyn Garden City and laying sort of garden cities to waste. And it's always a lot of fun. So, yeah, it's about it's Simon's character. It's about a group of friends who try and recreate a pub crawl that they did when they were teenagers.
Yes.
And one of whom is very enthusiastic about doing it, and four of them are not. And it's based on me trying to do a pub crawl in my hometown when I was 19.
Yeah.
Which didn't go very well. I think there's maybe 15 pubs in Wells in Somerset. And I got to number 6 before I got completely blackout drunk. And I think the fact that I never finished it gnaws at me.
Yeah.
And then 20 years later, there's a movie.
And it's got to be a disaster, because I think I probably could have drunk 12 pints when I was 18, just.
Oh, I could. I found out I couldn't.
No, but I definitely couldn't do it now, because I drink 2 pints, I'm really feeling like throwing up. So I understand why men move to whiskey at my age, because you can have a whiskey and then you don't feel bloated. So that's got to be... But it was quite interesting about... you might look bloated, but you don't feel it, and that is the important... Simon plays a kind of slightly less lovable character than usual, I would say. He's usually a bit of a fool, but likeable fool. And well, he's a bit nasty. I mean, I like it, but he's a bit nasty, wouldn't you say?
He's basically, I mean...
More of a prick.
Yeah. I think sort of he is one of those... I think a lot of people have that... There's that character, that person in your... You know, that was the coolest kid at school, who is now no longer the coolest kid.
Yeah.
But the person who's really clinging on to their teens.
The Fonz.
Yeah, like the Fonz.
Like the Fonz.
Yeah, yeah. Well, absolutely, because he's based on... Well, actually, one of the films that inspired it, in a way, is American Graffiti, which is like the precursor. And the Paul LaMatt character in that, which is then the basis for the Fonz, is exactly that guy. Same as Matthew McConaughey's character in Dazed and Confused, the guy who stayed back in the town and stayed there too long and is still going to the same bars. So I think like Simon's character is that the others have grown up and he really wants to drag them all back to their teenage years when he was the king.
Hmm.
But I think as Simon had done like both, in the other two films, he's more likable. Although, you know, that he wanted to play like the sort of a bit more of the wild man in this one than the straight man.
Yeah.
But he's so great. And what's funny is that Simon, when he was at school, used to be a goth. Like there's photos of him with kind of like, you know, full on sort of Cure duds, and he used to like Fields of the Nephilim and Sisters of Mercy and Bauhaus and The Cure. So he was actually in his element in this costume. He said it was his favourite costume to wear because he's in the kind of like the trench coat. He's like got the sixth form trench coat still on and the DMs.
Yeah.
And he was loving being in that costume and the dyed black hair.
Yes, it's unusual, but it's good. It's unusual to see him. But it's an amazing relationship that he and Nick have. That obviously you've worked with them through all of the stuff they've done together, I suppose, more or less.
Yeah.
And pretty much everything, actually.
Yeah.
So Nick is a little bit more square, I guess, in this one, or a little bit more...
Well, it's funny, because in the time that I've known Nick, since when I first met him just before Spaced, and he was pretty much like the character in Shaun of the Dead in some respects, you know, nicer than the character in Shaun of the Dead. But he was Simon's, like, flatmate, and he'd been working, and he worked at Chiquito's in Staples Corner, and he hadn't acted before... But he was like, you know, Simon's like, you know, flatmate.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the time that I've known him, he's like not only become like a successful actor, but is like a dad and is married.
Yeah.
And so I think it was nice to do something with his character where it reflects the fact that he's like a grown up now, you know. And so there was, it sort of, you'll see in the movie, it starts to sort of change. But definitely when, it's just that thing of, I think it's always an interesting thing when you go back to your hometown and you meet kind of people that you were really friendly with at school, and you know, some people you can just kind of fall straight back in with, and other people like your lives are completely different.
Yeah.
And I'm always, you know, like I always feel like a charlatan that I don't really have like a proper job, you know, and my friends have proper jobs and proper lives and stuff, so I always think what I'm doing is a bit silly compared to them. I'm not sure what they think. But it's that thing I always that thing. I don't know if you go back to Cheddar much, but no. Whenever I would
I can't be amongst those people. Now I've got all this. They wouldn't understand it. Even the electricity would be confusing. Yes, I do. Now I've got. I know exactly what you mean. Yeah, no, I can move around quite easily without being noticed. Though I was walking down the road in North London the weekend, and a man cycled past with headphones on, and as he cycled past, he shouted, "I'm listening to you." So I don't know whether he was listening to a podcast or just was a very bad spy.
When we were making Hot Fuzz, because we made Hot Fuzz in my hometown, so we were shooting in my hometown, which wasn't originally the plan. It was like written with Wells in Somerset in mind, and we actually went around a whole bunch of other towns before, because I just assumed that Wells would say no.
Yeah,
because it's quite a, you know.
Well, you're right in the heart of historic Wells. Yeah. It's kind of unbelievable to see that shootout going when you know the area, and the shootout in the town square. With the crosses, there's like really old things in there that you sort of think.
No, I was always convinced they were going to throw us out at some point. And we were shooting that scene where the kind of the NWA are all in their cloaks, and we were shooting it in the Bishop's Palace. And none of the town had read the script. Nobody had script approval, the locations, and I thought the Bishop of Bath and Wells is going. They said, "Oh, the Bishop of Bath and Wells is going to come down and watch some of the filming." And I thought, "We're going to get thrown out." And he came down, but he came down with a fun camera. And it was like the Bishop of Bath and Wells with a fun camera going, and taking like sort of snaps between takes. But I always thought we were going to get chucked out of the town.
Second mention of the Bishop of Bath and Wells so far in this series of the podcast. Hopefully we'll go for a hat trick with Mark Thomas. It was the Bishop of Bath and Wells, wasn't it? I'm assuming it was a different one that Stephen Fry met in prison. Damn, I had a really good question before I got distracted by that. Oh, well, it's gone. These things happen. What was it? Gone.
Something.
This happens in the Jonathan Ross show. They just cut it out in the Jonathan Ross. He goes, can't think what I was going to say. It was a really important bit. I was going to ask you about something about Wells. It's gone.
I worked at the Summerfields in the movie. That was my other job. Wookiee Hole Car Park I only did for one summer.
Right.
But I worked at Summerfields. Before that, it was Gateway.
Yes,
we had a Gateway. For like 5 years as my sort of like Saturday job and Easter job and summer job.
I wonder if I ever came by and bought.
Saw this young shelf stacker. Yeah. Thought that kid's got something.
Have I seen him on Going Live at some point? Probably.
Can't be the same kid for Going Live. He's stacking the Pampers. It can't be him.
Would you go back to the Summerfield if the film directing doesn't work out?
Well, it closed.
Yeah.
And I have the S from Summerfield in my house.
Have you?
I do. I have the blue S.
Are you ever tempted to go back and buy Summerfield and then destroy it?
It's gone bust. I don't think it exists.
You could buy
Wales.
The building and then... If I was like a big Hollywood movie staff director like you are, and had millions of pounds like you have, I would buy that. I'd buy everywhere I'd work. Cheddar Caves, I'd buy that and then destroy it with a... with a big thing. You know those big cranes with a ball on the end?
In a similar vein, when Summerfields closed down, somebody from the local paper said, we'd like you to sign the S from Summerfields because we're going to give it to charity. And I said, why don't I pay you for the S and you give that money to charity because I want the S. So I have it. So I gave them like 200 quid and I have the S. It's mine.
They're thinking, what a chump. There's loads of those Summerfields.
But it was that particular S. My manager at the time, who the Timothy Dalton character is slightly based on, whose name was such a silly name for a supermarket manager that we didn't put it in the script because it sounded like a made-up, like, Trumpton. His name, a supermarket manager, was Mr. Stockwell. So we didn't call him Mr. Stockwell. But he used to let me, when I was on Going Live and Gimme Five, he used to let me have, like, Saturdays off to go and do it. And he was always very sweet. But this is...
Some little girls going, Mr. Stockwell.
After I'd been on Going Live, there was an incident where a baby had been sick by the Tills and I had to clean it up, and the manager walked past and said really loudly, goes, "He's not in Hollywood yet, is he?"
And when you got to Hollywood, did you ring him up?
He's sad.
I am in Hollywood now. Did you go to his grave?
He's sadly no longer with us.
If I was you, I'd go to his grave. I'd have the wrecking ball thing ready. But before I took his grave apart, I'd go, "Yeah, I am in fucking Hollywood now, Mr. Stock. And where are you?
Oh.
Where are you? in the ground as your grave is about to be destroyed. I have paid for it.
No, he is a sweet man.
No, okay.
He was
That's
a sweet
I'd
man.
Do if I was you, if I had your power.
I already have the S. I'm happy. That's my picture of Dorian Gray. I always have the Summerfield S.
I loved this about space. There was the American version of space.
Oh yeah,
which
amazing.
when you took it to America, the guy said, "Yeah, we'd have to change a few things. We'd have to take out the drugs and the swearing, and obviously Mike can't have guns."
He said, hey, "This is what was amazing. This is an American producer saying." Oh, in our version, Mike can't have guns because in this country, guns are frowned upon.
What? He hasn't got enough guns. I think he's only got 100 guns. It's not enough.
That was the first of two aborted versions of space. That one was like whilst the show was on air, they tried to make an American version of it that didn't get past the pilot stage, and then way, way later, they actually made a pilot. Like that, they, you know, that me and Simon caused a bit of a stink about because they sort of implied that we were involved when we weren't, and so we weren't that happy about that.
Have you thought about this could work? In the American version, Dominic Thing, who plays Dustin Diamond, who plays Screech, and Mr. Belding.
Dustin Diamond?
Yeah, they could play, rather than have two people trying to be them, that was where I went wrong with that idea. We actually get them into the American version.
Space by the Bell.
Yeah, it's going to work.
Screech now I'm in.
Yeah, I'll write it up, you don't even have to do any work. If you just come in, direct the good night, sweetheart, good night. Good night, sweetheart, that would be good. it says on Wikipedia, which might not be true, that American Werewolf in London was a big influence on you.
It's true. I love that movie.
Yeah, it's a big influence on me
because of the amount of nudity in it.
Yeah, yeah. I've made it. This is again probably why I'm not a successful film director. I've made it my life's mission to give cunnilingus to Jenny Agutter. And so far, it hasn't happened. But that's one of the five, Katie. Okay, I'm allowed five celebrity shags.
Who else is in there?
13 from House. Don't know her real name, don't care.
Olivia Wilde is her name?
Yeah, Olivia Wilde. I want the character, not Olivia Wilde. Amy Pond from Doctor Who, character, not the. Alison Brie, the actual actress, not any of the characters she plays. She's great. Have you seen Alison Brie?
Not Trudy Campbell?
No. Who's that?
That's the character she plays in Mad Men.
Oh, that's true. Yes, of course it is. Anne Widdecombe. And Jenny Agutter. I've got a couple of the older ladies in there. That's all right.
Anne Widdecombe's the old one out there.
Well, because why do you assume it has to be an attractive young woman, you sexist? Older women have a lot to give. It's mainly because she's a virgin and I'm just, you know, I like a challenge.
But Jenny Agutter's probably the same age as Anne Widdecombe.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. I've got no problem with the old women.
Me neither.
And I just also think if Anne Widdecombe opened up a bit and just kind of... Not like that. You know, maybe being made love to by one of the world's greatest lovers is the thing that would make us go, oh, maybe gay people aren't so bad after all. Now I've had sex with Richard Herring. So it's a good bit. That's the bit I liked in American Werewolf London. She's in a shower. She said, I love Jenny Agutter. Have you worked with Jenny Agutter?
No, I never
have. Had Jenny Agutter in any of your films?
No.
Why not?
I think probably,
How can you like American Werewolf London and not put Jenny Agutter... Can you, in your next film, for me, can you put Jenny Agutter receiving oral sex and then having a shower?
When I first came to... I'm not dodging the question.
And then swimming around in the pool in that film. My brain's gone to Logan's Run. That's the best. If I could travel back in time... Because she's a local girl as well. She was a West Country girl as well, Jenny Agutter.
Where's she from?
So there was... I think she was in... Somewhere in Devon, I think. Anyone know? She was quite close, because I worked out... You know, there was... I once saw her in the BBC canteen when I was 23 and she'd have been about 30, late 30s. And that's feasible. I could feasibly, you know, apart from me being an unattractive 23-year-old man and her being a sophisticated actress, I could feasibly, at that moment, you know, we could have had a brief relationship where she had a toy boy. But when I was young, she was in the, you know, I was too young when she was famous. She was a bit older than me. That was the moment. wasn't it? I genuinely went weak at the knees when I went walked past Jenny Agata, seriously. But I think it might just have been some kind of muscle memory.
Have you ever listened to the commentary on the American Wealth DVD?
I don't know if I have. I've got it.
There's a cast commentary with David Norton and Griffin Dunne, and when Jenny Agata comes on screen, they both go quiet for about 90 seconds. And then one of them goes, "Oh, Jenny." And it seems to me that silence speaks volumes that they probably both tried to copy.
They'd have to.
When I first came to London,
yeah.
I tried to find the porn cinema that was in American Wealth in London at Piccadilly Circus, which yeah. doesn't actually exist.
No.
It's now a kebab shop. It's not good, is it?
That's not good.
I don't think it was a porn cinema at the time either. I think I actually asked John Landis about it. I met John Landis and said, where's the porn cinema?
Is it still showing that? With Lindsay
Drew. I did a thing at the BFI recently. I showed it because they have this Screen Epiphanies thing. And I got actors from the film to come and do their lines again on stage. Because me and my friends would do impressions from that film all the time. Particularly, David Schofield, who's the darts player.
Yeah.
Who says, "You made me miss." And also the commuter, who's played by Michael Carter, who has the line at Tottenham Court Road, who says, "Hello, is there anybody there? I can assure you this is the least bit amusing."
Which you actually use in your film, it's Help.
It's also in Space. Is it? I've done it twice.
Good. It's good to know where that came from. It's an amazing film.
I love that film.
There's no one of that name here.
Lindsay Drew's Finest Moment. Her son is now in that sitcom. Do you know that his son is in the sitcom Outnumbered?
I do know that because Ben Dover.
He's the son of Ben Dover and Lindsay Drew.
Ben Dover
did Tiger Honey Drew.
Yeah, he did a show after me in Edinburgh, in which the Ben Dover, who is a soft porn actor that probably most of you are unaware of. He's quite hardcore porn actor. I've never seen. He's one of his. You know, people after gigs, people have like DVDs and things like that to sell. One of Ben Dover's pieces of merchandise is a dildo of his own cock. They themselves. Which I might try that. I should have done that for Talking Cock, shouldn't I? Maybe I did, and maybe just no one noticed them on the table. It is a sort of odd. It's an odd thing that's his parents. That's worse than having your teachers, your parents being teachers, don't you think? Your parents being in porn films.
I'll take Pickle over that, yeah.
Take Pickle over that. If they call him Pickle in the porn, Pickle, come on. I'm trying to work here. Get back to do your homework. He seems to have worked out nice. He's the most well-behaved of those kids in Outnumbered, isn't he? I've lost them to that. I think they're your crowd. They don't understand anything I say. Talk about Star Wars or something like that. What do you think about the new Star Wars? The three. Well, they're not new, but the other three they did that weren't the original ones.
I don't know. I hope it's like, I'm not a fan of the first three. I mean, the prequels, not the middle three.
Yeah.
So I'd like them to be more like the original three and less like the ones from 10 years ago.
Yeah, they weren't very good.
No, I wasn't a fan.
But it's for kids, and they grow up. People in space, zombies, robots, and stuff. They're rubbish, isn't it? Why don't they do a proper?
I remember telling my brother that I'd heard. I hadn't even seen it. I remember telling my brother, said, "Oh, yeah, Phantom Menace is no good." He was like, "No, no." He like refused to believe it initially. He was so angry at me for telling him the bad news that maybe it wasn't supposed to be that great.
How do you think that happens, though, that someone like that has a vision in the first place? You're worried that that could happen to you, that you're doing these films and that you could just suddenly miss the boat and put a Jar Jar Binks in? Is there a Jar Jar Binks character in the world's end?
Not yet, but no. In 10 years' time.
There's still time, isn't there? There's still time today. You could go back. Because I tell you what, the good thing about the world's end is Tim from The Office is in it. That is that you have learnt a valuable filmmaking lesson. Though again, I would advise you to go back and remake the film with him as Tim from The Office, not playing this stupid character he plays. It's got to just be Tim from The Office. the original and the best. You have missed the opportunity, I think. Well, maybe you haven't. To put a Shrek in it.
Shrek?
Yeah, I think a Shrek. Why not have an extra friend? You could do this with CGI, because it's not even real. The Shrek. Just go back tonight, next couple of days. There's the five mates, and then there's
Anna
Shrek. People like Shrek. Yeah, honestly, the film would do a lot better if you do that. Put a Shrek in. It's not the Shrek, so you don't have to worry about any copyright issues. It's just a Shrek. It's a different Shrek.
Did you, when they had the last Shrek, what was the last Shrek called? It had a funny title. It was like a pun that didn't quite, but the billboards, I just remember that the tagline, I think it was in the States when it came out. Maybe it's exactly the same here. But the tagline, which I always thought was a bit strange, was, "What the Shrek just happened?"
It's good for a kid's film.
It's exactly what you would say as you were leaving that movie. Yeah.
Is that the one where Rumpelstiltskin's in it? Is that the fourth?
I have never seen
Shrek.
The first one.
Oh, yeah, the first one is good.
I never saw Shrek 2.
The mistake they make with the whatever the last one is, it 3 or 4?
4.
Too many Shreks. It's got to be one. There's a lot of Shreks in it. There's fucking hundreds of them. They thought we're onto a good thing. Shrek. People like Shrek. Let's put in 100 Shreks.
No.
That's not how it works, is it? You can't put in 100 Cornettos in one of your films. It's got to be one or two Cornettos.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is there a Cornetto in the new film?
There is. I won't tell you where.
Yeah, I won't tell you where. You have the first person to spot it wins a lifetime supply of Cornettos. It's hidden away.
Yep.
Yeah. Did Cornetto ever pay you any money for saying Cornetto all the time?
No.
And
but
will they pay me Cornetto?
This is true. Is that we? The reason it's in Shaun of the Dead is because it used to be my hangover cure when I was at college. Hmm. I used to have a Cornetto if I was hungover. I used to feel a lot better. Cornetto probably do not support this advice. But then, so we wrote that into the first film, and Nick Frost asked for a Cornetto because we thought it would be a funny thing to ask for first thing on a Sunday morning. Then at the premiere, free Cornettos. Amazing. So on the way out of the premiere, we all had like Cornettos. I thought, this is incredible. Let's write it into the second film and get some more ice cream. Hot Fuzz premiere, 2007, no Cornettos. So we thought we'd go for third time lucky.
And you call it Hot Fuzz, and that if it's hot, people think, oh, what do I need? A Cornetto to cool down. Something cool and not fuzzy.
The original title was Hot Hot Summer Me Like Ice Cream. Me want ice cream now.
You know, you can't get Cornettos in Venice.
Really?
I was very disappointed with that. The only reason I went to Venice with my wife for our proper honeymoon.
To see that man.
Was to go and get to go on a Cornetto, go on a gondola.
And sing
with
the song.
Cornetto, go, just one Cornetto. Because I bet those blokes have never heard that. Go, can't join in. I bet they can all do it if you sing. It's
but
very
they probably don't know, none of them know the song.
They will do, because English people will come there and go, just the one Cornetto. Which is like a very racist thing
can
to
you
do.
Sing?
Just the one Cornetto. But they couldn't, there were no way. It's very hard to go to Venice. I challenge anyone to do this without that, without accidentally humming that song.
Can you remember all the lyrics?
Yeah. Well, just the one Cornetto, give it that to me. Delicious ice cream from Italy. The nut and chocolate dream, I'm guessing. Give me Cornetto from Wars ice cream. Hey! Then there's an oil, he gets it stolen.
But we both missed a bit in the middle.
Yeah.
I know, I had a blank on that as well.
The nut and chocolate dream.
Is that what it is?
I don't know, that's why
anybody
made up. There's loads. You can do it now. All those things that used to go for years, what was that lyric in
YouTube?
Yeah, just go and just Google it, and then the lyrics are written up usually correctly. The lyrics to Friends, I could never work out. Your love life's, it goes, your love's life's,
the
OA. Yeah, but I never got that until I looked it up. I mean, it ruins everything, because you can argue about those things for a long time. Maybe we should do this, you know, off camera. Oh look, I've got before I'll let you go because you've got to finish your film. I've got some
Shrek in it.
There's a lot of work to do with the Shrek. You can fit him in most places. You could just probably just superimpose on Nick Frost.
You know what? He won't mind me telling the story. He was asked. You laugh. He was asked to be in Shrek the Musical. And his response was, fuck that. But he was asked to be in Shrek the Musical.
They got someone really good to be Shrek in the first one. That guy from Four Lines.
Nigel Lindsay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why did he do it?
The Green.
I understand why Richard Blackwood's doing it, but why did the guy from... these are some questions from Welsh children. When they first asked the question in this podcast... they made Stephen Fry admit he'd try to kill himself, so that's what we're after.
Oh my god.
Did you have fun making Spaced? Let's see what comes out of it. That's from Archie van der Vliet. And when is season 3 coming out? I asked you that. That's no good. This is a good question, because I don't really... this doesn't sound like a real thing, but it is. Who is Ant-Man, and why does he merit a film about himself? Ben Evans.
Well, you will see. I haven't even started making it yet. Who the actor is, we don't know yet. But me and Joe Cornish wrote a script, and we're going to start making it next year. So, have to wait and see.
Ant-Man. Man turned into a bat. That makes sense. An ant. I'm sure he did Ant-Man as a joke. I love ants. Have you seen in Shan Andalus where the ants...
Yes.
Russell Brand didn't know what I was talking about last week.
Shan Andalus. It's in the Pixies song.
Yeah, it is. Ants coming out of your ant. Put that in one of your films.
I will.
And the eyeball being cut in half.
I will. Along Shrek's eyeball.
Yeah, Shrek with ants coming out of his hands. That would work.
A Louis Bunuel version of Shrek would be amazing.
What the Shrek is going
and
on?
Shrek, and Shrek Andalou. I'm in.
It's good. With Gary Sparrow in it as well. All right, I'll do one more.
Nick Frost will do that one.
Yeah. What is your favourite film from the following genres?
Okay.
Comedy, horror, sci-fi. Archie Van Devlet. This is back to Archie Van Devlet.
Comedy.
Yeah.
Raising Arizona.
Okay.
Horror. Let's say American Wealth in London. What was the third one?
It was, what is your... Oh, yes, okay. And sci-fi.
2001. A Space Odyssey. Oh. I couldn't tell whether that was disappointed or impressed.
What about 2010?
I saw that, the year we make contact. I saw that before 2001.
Did you?
I did, at the cinema, I saw 2010.
I didn't see 2002,
it said previously
2003,
on 2001.
2004, 2005, 2006, 2007, 2008, 2009, so a bit lost. I didn't see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. All right, fuck off. It's an old Liam Herringer. Oh, that was... I nearly remember what I was going to ask before.
You could re-edit
something about Lee and Harry. I don't think it was the same, but when you were talking about porn films, porn cinemas, in one of the Fist of Fun sketches, there's me and John Thompson coming out of a porn cinema, but that was a real porn cinema, but it's not there anymore, so don't go searching for it. I'm guessing no one did. It's now probably a sex shop. It was down there. Right, look, well, I think we should probably let you get back to... Have I forgotten to ask him anything important, do you think?
Argus.
Oh, well, asparagus. We can't let you go. We can't let you go. What was I thinking? How could I let you go back to work on your film without asking? When you eat asparagus, which I'm presuming you do.
Yeah.
Mainly, probably only asparagus. Now you live in Hollywood.
Apart from when I live here.
Yeah. Now you should go back to Wells with your plumes of asparagus in your hat. Just throwing it around the confused people of Somerset. Why is this stray? It looks like a stick.
Green spear.
You can eat it. Does your wee smell of asparagus, or not of asparagus, but strange after you have weed?
I think it does for everybody.
No,
right?
It does not.
Really?
You know, it does.
I know, you know, I hate asparagus.
Do you?
I do. I'm not a big asparagus fan. Mm. So it's not something I... It's not something I... that would be my idea of hell.
Okay. Oh, what I really love, and I think Shaun of the Dead is, like, just the best, one of the absolutely best British films, comedy films of all time, best comedy films of all time, but it's right up there. I think the work you're doing is very reminiscent for me of, in a different way, of the Monty Python films, in terms of creating this body of work that are fantastic films, and Shaun of the Dead is fantastic, wonderful film. What you're doing at the moment is a really cool thing on your website where you're doing a photo a day from the films.
Yeah.
So you're doing, and we're getting some kind of history of the of what was going on behind the scenes, and
yeah, no, I'm putting up a photo a day from every day of the shoot because it was 10 years ago, and I just thought, and you know, I think people don't often realise like exactly how much you shoot in a day or what things are location and which things are sets and stuff. So it's also, you know, I wasn't going to write anything about the photos, and then every day when I look at the photos, I think, oh yeah, this happened that day. And so it's kind of, I like doing it. It's a great thing to do because you don't often kind of break it down like that. And even just putting the schedule on the thing, people who are not working in the film industry are fascinated by what a schedule looks like and stuff. Not a particularly sexy answer to end on.
Do you think, I mean, it's very hard to top Shaun of the Dead, do you think? I mean, I think it's such a perfect film.
I don't know. I mean, you know, like, I think sort of when we were doing it at the time, like you're just trying to make a decent film. You don't really think about, you know, it's just like, is it going to be good? Will people in the UK like it? You don't think about anything else beyond that.
Yeah.
So, no, I'm very happy with, like, I'm very proud of that movie. And I'm proud of the other two as well.
And so you should be. And I actually, from what I've seen of the new film, which isn't, I've seen a little bit of it, I think there's a sort of maturity to it, even though it's just quite immature as well. But it feels to me potentially like it could be better than Shaun of the Dead.
Well, we wanted to do something where I think the thing that's nice about working with Simon and Nick is that we don't pretend to be younger. I think that's one of the reasons that here's the real reason there would never be a Space 3, as far as I'm concerned, is that to sort of pretend to be 26 forever would be a really bad idea. Like, and I think what's nice with Shaun and Hot Fuzz and World's End is we get to get older with each one. Yeah. So that's kind of what's nice about it.
Did you know that when I hear Don't Stop Me Now by Queen, it's very hard not to think about that particular scene in
that's
the
good.
Film. But now I have stopped thinking about it because in Russell Brand's book, he said that was written after a show that Freddie Mercury did where his manager then bought him 80 rent boys who all this is what Russell Brand says, who then all lined up and he had sex with like about 80 rent boys.
That doesn't
and then, some, he, but... then that was what inspired that song. Now that's what goes through my mind when I...
But it does. But the lyrics seem to be, it's definitely like a hedonistic song. I always thought it sounded like sort of particularly spooky at the end because it goes all ghostly. I always used to think it sounds like, this is before he died, so it sounds like he's dying at the end.
Right.
I always thought it Don't Stop Me Now when Freddie's voice goes all kind of spooky and spectral. It was like, you know, it was the beginning of the end. He's burnt out.
Well, it's probably, you know, probably that exact... Don't have sex with 80 rent boys, just in case.
You know, one of the reasons we put that in the movie is because I saw the Queen musical, Ben Elton's Queen musical, which I did not care for. But here's the thing about it. You would think, have you seen it?
I haven't, no, I couldn't.
They don't use Don't Stop Me Now in the show. It's the most obvious, like, show tune of them all.
You know why they didn't? It's because someone said, we are going to stop you
now. No, that's exactly what they do in the show. That's exactly what they do.
Really?
They sing 5 seconds of it, and somebody goes, and they stop it, and it's like, wah, wow. You know, think, ah, what an idiot. It's the best song.
Yeah.
So that's why I tried to reclaim it from We Will Rock You.
Ben Elton, he did write The Right Way, so don't judge him.
Which is about me.
Yeah. But he does go on about how amazing that, and I've never seen the musical because I'm not a massive Queen fan, but I also just couldn't bear to see that happen. But he does, I think if you took the Queen music, Queen songs, and in between, they were all sung by a big cast of people, and in between, a man just came on and did a shit on the stage. I think that would still be a worldwide smash. So I don't think the script really matters that much to the people who go and see it. It's just, oh, we've got to see. Oh, there's a man shitting on there. Oh, you can see all the steam coming off. Can see like little droplets coming out. I once saw a film of a man shitting into his own mouth. It's one of the most disgusting things. And what was really, it was very grainy, but the thing that made it truly disgusting, and every time I think about it, it makes me sick, and we're going to end the podcast on this, is that right at the end of the shit, that kind of flops on his face, sort of liquid comes out.
This is an episode of The Right Way. I'm confused.
Even if that happened, it makes me sick every time I remember it. I've forgotten about it for a long time, and now that's just made up. Even if that was in between each song, as long as someone came in, swept up the shit, got rid of the man with the shit on his face, and he went, "You're a killer, Queen." They were like, "Oh, I'll get the songs back for you." Oh no, here comes the shit, man. As long as they ended on a song. I think if they ended on the shitting man.
Thumbs down.
So yeah, if you ever need any help with any of the scripts, do let me know. Ladies and gentlemen, he's got to go back and finish his film. It's Edgar Wright, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Edgar Wright. The music was by Pest, thanks to Orange Mark and everyone at the British Comedy Guide, and Chris Evans, not that one, and everyone at Go Faster Stripe. It was produced by Ben Walker. It is a Fuzz, Go Faster Stripe, and Sky Potato production. How do you like them Sky Potatoes? Pretty good. Buy the video. Hope you enjoyed the show. It was free. If you would like to pay for something, there are lots of things on offer. You can buy the video of these podcasts from gofasterstripe.com/podcasts. You can buy all my DVDs and books from GoFasterStripe.com. Also, I am doing an Edinburgh show. We're all going to die at the Pleasance Beyond at 8 o'clock every night at the Edinburgh Fringe. And also Richard Herring's Edinburgh Fringe podcast. It's like this, but every single fucking day at the Stand at about 2:10 p.m. If you want to buy tickets for those, you go to edfringe.com. It'd be lovely to see you there. Also, my producer, Ben, is also producing Pappy's Flat Share Slamdown. There's a special only London date at the Soho Theatre on July the 8th. If you Google Pappy's Flat Share Slamdown, you will be able to buy tickets. That it's really good, so do go and see that and help support other podcasts. Thanks for listening. See you next time. Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Thanks for listening. Go to GoFasterStripe.com for all your Richard Herring download and book needs. Go to RichHerring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can. And make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.